So this is my, like, I think my fifth or sixth Mass this weekend, and every Mass I've heard, this is the first one I've preached, I've been at a couple other parishes, but everyone has pointed out that this is probably the most famous line in Scripture. You know, God sent his only begotten Son. And it probably is, you know, and it is an incredibly important line as well. But let's back up a little bit. So, who is Nicodemus? Nicodemus is a Pharisee, a very powerful Pharisee in Jerusalem at the time. And he goes to see Jesus, but he goes at night, right? And he goes at night because he doesn't want the people to see this powerful man, Nicodemus, the Pharisee, going off to talk to this rabble-rouser, right? This guy who's causing a lot of trouble, Jesus. They're going to be thinking, why is this guy going to see Jesus, right? So he goes at night so he doesn't get seen. And basically, Nicodemus says to Jesus, you know, God is definitely with you, because the things you're doing, you could not do on your own power, right? So Nicodemus sees that this rabble-rouser is with God. And it might be a little bit, confusing for Nicodemus, you know, seeing his power maybe being challenged by Jesus, right? So that's what's going on in the background there, right? How many of you know Bishop Barron, Robert Barron? Okay, I'm going to steal a little bit from him right now. If you don't know him, go to Word on Fire. I think isn't Word on Fire on your website? Yeah, so that's Bishop Barron. But anyway, he says today about this idea of, you know, raising the pole with the serpent on it. What's going on there is the Jews, you know, when they were in the desert, they again started to forget about God and started to go their own way, and so God sent them a bunch of snakes to bite them, right? And then Moses was told to make an image of a snake, put it on a pole, and the people, once they look at that pole, it will save them. And then we hear in the gospel today that the Son of Man needs to be lifted up on a pole. Now, was Jesus lifted up on a pole, could you say? Right? So we are Christians, we're supposed to make that connection. So, and this is what Bishop Barron said. You know, many of us have maybe, you know, some things in our childhood that aren't good, right? And it may have caused us to, have trouble in life, right? And the more we try to ignore what it is that we are ignoring, the more power it has over us. Addictions, right? The more we ignore what we need to look at, the more power it has over us. So the image from, the serpents biting, the poisonous serpents biting people, all right? They're being bitten by their lack of whatever it is, their addictions. And the only way that they're going to be saved from them is to look squarely at what it is they're trying to avoid. Does that make sense? Psychology 101 from 3,000 years ago, right? We, brothers and sisters, and this is Lent, isn't it? We must look at ourselves. If we want freedom, we have to look at ourselves. If we don't, you know, well, we're going to keep getting bitten, right? So that's Bishop Barron, and I called him and he said I could use it. I used to be, when I first started the idea of becoming a priest, I joined the Franciscans for a little while. And my novice master was a guy named John Vaughan. And John Vaughan was this amazing man. He was the minister general for the Franciscans for the whole world for, I think, about 72 to 1980, right? An incredibly wonderful man. And I remember I did my novitiate with them in Mission San Miguel in California. Hot, really hot, in the middle of the desert out there. And there was a number of other friars there, and there was this one guy named Tom Messner, Father Tom. Tom had a lot of problems. He had a lot of psychological problems. He hoarded and all of these kinds of things. He was a wounded person. You know, Tom was not doing well. And I remember this one time, Tom went in to go see Father John, and he was talking, and Tom had just made some mistake, maybe lost some money or something. I think that's what happened, but. So it wasn't good stuff. And so after they had the conversation, I was in there to talk to Father John. And I remember he said that he felt sorry for Tom, right? He had compassion for Tom. Instead of getting angry, you just lost $5,000. Instead, you could see that Tom's troubles distressed Father John. He had compassion. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, if that was me, I would have been all over Tom. And that just that one little bit of mercy that I saw Father John give to Father Tom, it really changed the way I look at poverty. It changed the way I look at people's foibles, people's problems. Who here, when I ask the question, I want you to put your hands up if this fits. Who here wants to be poor? Who here wants to be homeless? Who here wants to have psychological problems? I don't see any hands up. And it really became clear to me, people who are struggling, they do not choose it out of freedom. Something has happened to them that they've missed the knowledge they need to know how to love, to know how to love and express themselves freely. Is that not sad? Is that not distressing? A few years earlier, actually, I was living in Chicago and I was working in a soup kitchen, right? And it was with the Peace Corps, and there was a woman there with us. Her name was Mary, and Mary was known. You couldn't go anywhere in Chicago, and people would come running up to her, Sister Mary, Sister Mary. Sister Mary was not a sister, right? But she had this reputation of being so generous, so merciful. Everybody knew her, and everybody loved her. She was an incredible woman, right? And I remember one time, you know, we also did the laundry for a lot of the poor families. And, you know, there was this one woman who clearly had a rough life, and she had a number of children. And when I first met her, she was pregnant for her, like, probably sixth child or something like that. And clearly they didn't have enough money to take care of them. And there was all sorts of trouble going on in the family. But when the child was born, you know, and they came to get dinner at the soup kitchen. I remember the first time Mary saw this baby, she grabbed the baby and she just lifted this baby up and was filled with joy to see this and welcome this new life. Knowing that just that one little bit of, you know, connection could mean something to that little one, right? What does it serve for us to blame the poor for being poor? What does it serve for us to not welcome the migrant? What does it serve for us to push away people who are different than us? How do we look at the Anuim? Are the Anuim present in our world today? That's a question? You betcha. The Anuim are present all the time. Widows, orphans, migrants, sick people. They're always present, and they're always poor. Why are they poor? Do we blame them? Or are we ignoring the prophets, just like they did in the first reading? The chosen people were chosen not because they were special. They were chosen because they were supposed to teach the world who is our loving, merciful God. And they do that by taking care of the Anuim, and they forget. God is merciful. Jesus needs to be put on that pole so that we can look at his incredible gift of mercy, his 100% donation of his life for mercy for us, so that we know we have a merciful God. Right? And that gift is free. Right? That mercy is given to everyone for free. It doesn't matter who you are. You don't have to do everything right. You just have to decide to take care of the Anuim, to look at your own life and ask for God's mercy to change things that need to be changed. It's Lent. Can you think of a better Lenten practice than... by the way, I see this a lot. It says, pray fast and give. That doesn't mean pray fast and give. It means pray fast and give.